Wall Street is trying for an encouraging end to a horrible month. A big rally Wednesday catapulting the NASDAQ out of correction territory and could see the market's first back-to-back gain in weeks. But what a difference a few good earnings stories can make. Better than expected profits out of Facebook and a pledge to control costs next year, offsetting concerns about slowing user growth. Investors' response? The biggest one-day buying of Facebook stock since April.
Some Airbus jets are arriving late. New ones due for delivery to airlines, that is. Europe's biggest aerospace firm saying it will be a stretch to hit targets for the year. Potentially bad news, as airlines mostly pay for their jets on delivery. These planes among the problems. The new version of its big-selling A320 family. They're key to Airbus's ambition to dominate the market for medium-sized jets. But the company has hit snags at its Hamburg factory.
Construction work on a futuristic new Mexico City airport in full swing this week, even after the country's incoming president said he was canceling the $13 billion project. The decision was announced Monday following the results of a referendum. Around 750,000 Mexicans voted against it, but that's less than 1% of the electorate, putting the credibility of the vote in question.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here with us on Thursday. It's November the 1st, 5:11 in the morning. Another business day getting underway and another edition of The Opening Bell. Heck, another business month. Welcome to November. Lots on the program today. It is Thought Leader Thursday, and in just a few seconds, we'll bring in Don Lloyd this morning from Associated Bank. We'll have a conversation about all of the turmoil around the country, around the world, really, that's impacting maybe markets and future investments. Don will be here in just a moment, a little bit later in the program. In our second segment at about 5:40 this morning, aldermen have unveiled a plan in Chicago to reduce homelessness. We'll be talking with the executive director of the Coalition for the Homeless in Chicago in our second segment about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward a positive open later this morning on Wall Street. Dow futures are up nearly 0.5% this morning. Same story for the S&P and for the NASDAQ, up about a third. Dow futures are up 116 points. As we check the rest of the globe, markets in Europe are generally in the green, with the DAX, the CAC, the FTSE all higher, with a FTSE up just a fraction, the DAX up almost 3/4, and the CAC in France up almost 0.5%. And in Asia, markets mixed, with the Nikkei ending the day down a percent, down 232 points, the Hang Seng up 436 points, the Shanghai is up just a fraction, and oil is trading at $64.84 a barrel. A couple of stories before we get on the program today, before we get busy with the rest of the program. We have a walkout at Google, where employees, about 1,500 of them, mostly women, walked off the job to protest the company's handling of sexual harassment allegations. Workers are upset that the company paid millions of dollars in exit packages to two male executives who were accused of harassment and did not disclose what they did. The walkout expected to take place at almost two dozen different offices around the world. Google has about 94,000 employees. CVS Health is cutting a new program that provides new benefits and delivery perks for $5 a month or $48 a year. It's called the Care Pass program, and it's being rolled out first in Boston. One of the perks is going to be $10 a month for people to save in the store, to spend in the store. There's also a free delivery on some prescription drugs and other items. The company trying to prepare for Amazon's entry into the pharmacy market and into the very competitive world in the pharmacy space against the leader in the pharmacy space, Deerfield-based Walgreens. And for the first time ever, HBO is dark on one of its biggest distributors. HBO disappeared from satellite service Dish last night after the two failed to agree on a new deal. HBO blames Dish, saying in a statement that the satellite service has responded to what HBO calls its good faith attempts with unreasonable terms. Dish blames HBO parent company AT&T for taking a more aggressive stance with its pay TV partners. Dish represents 2.5 million subscribers for HBO. AT&T, by the way, is the owner of DirecTV, which is the competition for Dish. Let's begin front and center this morning with Thought Leader Thursday. Don Lloyd is here. He's the SVP of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange at Associated Bank. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. How have you been?
Doing very, very well. How was your summer?
Very fast, yeah, very quick, over. And now we're getting into the shorter days of the winter solstice, so bring it on.
Right. It's so much going on in the news. I don't even know where to begin this morning, but why don't we start with Brexit? No deal still in terms of how they're going to pull out. There's not a firm path ahead. What's the concern here?
Yep. Brexit is one of three major things going on over in Europe right now. And you've got the perfect storm brewing, and Brexit is a big corner of that right now. So where are we with that? You know, 2 years ago, you had a referendum where the people of the United Kingdom decided they wanted out of the European Union. And that started everything in motion. Article 50 got implemented or executed. And next thing you know, there's negotiations that are occurring between the UK leaving and what are you going to do with contracts? What are you going to do with debt? You know, what are going to be the details of the exit? And guess what? They can't come to any agreement. So the deadline for the exit is March of 2019, which is it's a coming fast. Mm-hmm. So there's talk of no agreement. Are we leaving or aren't we? And what's that going to mean to trade, to tariffs, to contract negotiations, to transportation? I mean, when you're taking a look at Ireland, you know, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, all of a sudden you've got borders that are up. Mm-hmm. You just can't drive across the borders. It's not like driving from Missouri to Illinois or Illinois to Missouri. You're crossing in now to a sovereign country and not part of the European Union anymore. So all of that is going to be up in the air. And that's sort of where we are with the whole Brexit thing that's coming back.
Yeah, I remember our past conversations about Brexit were it should be smooth, should happen, shouldn't be a big deal. So is it fair to say that this has been mishandled? Is that what you say?
No, you're just getting into the weeds now. Okay. I mean, now okay. Reality. You know, 2 years ago, let's vote, let's leave.
Right
now. 2 years is a long way, but 2 years went by pretty fast.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah. It went by real fast. So what you have now is this, there are economic implications here. It's going to change our way of life over in the UK. It's going to have an impact to the economy and to the financial markets and whatnot. So of the 650 members of parliament within the UK, there's over 100 of them that right now want to have a second referendum. Before we leave, before we decide to go with no agreement and go down that road, maybe we should have a second referendum to really ask the people, is this what you really want? You voted for it almost 2 years ago, but let's have one more to make sure you're still on board with this.
A do-over.
Right. And that's where you saw the protest march last week of over 700,000 people marching around London, which there was every bit of 700,000 people marching around. Sometimes those numbers can be over-exaggerated or whatnot. But if you've seen pictures of that, I mean, there was every bit of 700,000 people marching around. So in the world, global financial markets, where all the markets are interlinked and the pool is, you know, the world is one big pool of money that sloshes around. This is just one big uncertainty in Europe that's there. That's going to create asset reallocation. You know, the world, the pool of money looks for yield, you know, for some amount of risk. And uncertainty creates risk. And now you've got it front and center here in Brexit looking right at you.
It's interesting because some polls in the UK suggest that people would vote not to leave the European Union if they had to do it over again.
Completely up in the air again. And then what happens?
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, well, we're going to pull the plug on this. Well, you're pretty far down a road. I mean, this is going to spill over into 2019. And as March of 2019 appears, it is going to start to impact the markets more and more, not only in Europe, but on a global basis, including the United States. Uncertainty creates assets to flow into safe haven type countries and securities. And what are those securities? Treasuries. Now, you saw the 10-year treasury yield on the 10-year treasury a month ago was around 3%, blasted up to 3.25%. Because these flows are starting to occur, you saw it come back to about a 307, a 308. We're about a 313 right now. So you're starting to see incredible volatility. And that's just going to persist. That's going to continue. It's this uncertainty.
But, what would be some concrete things that would happen in the United States that maybe investors would see here in this country?
Yeah, you'll see, I think, the dollar strengthen. You'll see the treasury yields come down. Yields will come down. Prices will go up in treasuries as a safe haven currency. Then money's got to go someplace. It'll initially go into treasury, could go into stock market. You know, I know that we've got our midterm elections coming up. I'm actually quite surprised that the equity market hasn't sold off more in front of that. I'm pretty amazed at the resilience of the equity market. Volatility has been off the charts, but the equity markets are holding in. Once we get on the other side of that, then it's going to open up the doors for monies to start coming back in. That uncertainty of election, you know, whether the Democrats take the House and the Senate take nothing, at least it's going to be behind us, and the market's like that. So then you're going to start to see money flowing back again, probably into equities, and I wouldn't be surprised to see overseas money coming into that as well.
You mentioned that this is more than just the UK.
Yep.
Italy, again, here's another country that has debt problems and budget problems. Give us a sense of what's happening there and how that's impacting.
Sure. Italy, you know, take Greece 2.0. Here you've got a government coalition of pretty conservative right administrators that are in place, whether they're the prime minister or the deputy prime ministers over in Italy. They want to sit there and present a budget. They have to present a budget legally to the European Union. And to be a member of the European Union, you have to meet certain criteria. Two of the criteria are your deficit to GDP needs to be less than 3%. They're proposing a budget which is 2.4%. Their deficit's 2.4% of GDP, which is fine, not a problem yet. It's the other deficit criteria that they're having problems with. Accumulated debt needs to be less than 60% of overall GDP. And Italy is twice that.
Wow.
And has been twice that when they were allowed to come into the European Union almost 20 years ago. They were outside those bands. And because everybody wanted Italy into the European Union, people sort of looked the other way. Italy was allowed to come in, and now they're 2.5 times that, or almost twice that. The only country that has a bigger accumulated deficit to GDP is Greece. The problem is that Italy is a lot bigger than Greece, so the debt numbers are a lot higher. So what happens is you've got the administration, or you've got the current administration over in Italy presenting and approving a pro forma budget which supports higher minimum wage, let's eliminate poverty, reduce the retirement age. It creates higher deficits when they need to be reducing deficits. So the market reacts and says, oh, higher deficits, what are we going to do? Interest rates go up. Bondholders' asset value goes down because these two things move inversely of each other. In the bond market, as interest rates go up, the price of the bond goes down. So you're holding an asset, an Italian debt asset, of less value than you had. Higher interest rates, not exactly good for the economy over there. And now you've got an administration that says, no, this is going to be our budget. What are you going to do, European Union? And the European Union sits back and says, well, we can fine you. We can sanction you. We can throw you out. And Italy's like, well, maybe we'll leave. So now you've got another country that's thinking, well, maybe we should go on our own, and off we go. It's Greece 2.0, but on steroids. This is where we're going.
Yeah. And if you're at the European Union, what an awful job to have these days, because you have to really kind of be like, okay, UK, you have to get your stuff together, and Italy, you have to get your stuff together, and you kind of almost have to be the tough policeman, don't you?
Herding cats. You're herding cats. And, you know, 20 years ago, when all of this launched and the euro came to be, you know, the European Union has been around, you know, longer than 20 years. But when they went to a single currency, when 28 countries went to had the option of going to a single currency, and most of them do use the euro, some don't, who are members of those 28 countries that are members of the European Union. Everything was fine. Sort of economies were running in sync with each other. Expansions and contractions pretty much lined up. And the big concern 20 years ago was what happens when they don't run in sync with each other, where you've got certain countries that are expanding and certain countries that are going into recession and contracting or having deficits to meet or whatnot. You're seeing that come to fruition now. probably about 10 years later than I thought it was going to happen, but that's what's going on right now. And those stressors are just going to continue. And the world doesn't like risk. It doesn't like stress. Yeah. It looks for safe haven types, and it looks for safer investments, which is just going to exacerbate the whole problem in Europe.
And to throw gas on the fire, let's jump over another border to Germany, and you have Angela Merkel getting ready to step out of the picture, and that economy is very important to Europe.
2019 is going to be the year of Europe, and it's going to be sort of the main driver in the global financial markets is what's going to be going on over there and how they're going to reconcile all this. And you're absolutely right. Here you have Germany, the largest country, the largest economy within the European Union. Angela Merkel, who is head of the CDU, the Christian Democratic Union, and also the chancellor. She's been chancellor of Germany since 2005, 64 years old, and has announced that she'll be stepping down as head of the CDU. She'll continue as chancellor until 2021. This is her fourth term. But the question becomes is who's going to run the CDU, her political party? Who's going to be chancellor after that? And quite honestly, there's no successor that can be really seen or picked at this point in time to take her place. Now, she has been sort of the poster child for stability, for discipline, for growth, sort of sacrificing German quality of life, if you will, for the sake of the European Union. And to have a leader like that step down and step aside without a successor or replacer creates a lot more of uncertainty that's out there.
Yeah, you create a vacuum which nobody likes from a financial standpoint or a political standpoint.
Worse than that, what you're seeing is it's created this void and this vacuum, and you've got right-wing conservatives that are really starting to gain traction over there. And that started about 2015 when the whole immigration or the migration occurred, you know, out of Syria and out of the Middle East, and they came up through Europe. And you know, Angela Merkel decided to open the borders. She let in probably a little over 1 million refugees come into Germany. And that really created a political stress for her. And it gave the opportunity for these right-wing conservatives to move forward. And they've got a voice now. So if you can see Germany swing more conservative, think what that's going to do to the stability of the region. That's going to be very interesting over there.
And the red alert siren goes off when you say right wing and Germany together. I think people kind of always wince at that just a little bit.
Well, once bitten, twice shy, but who lives in the past? We don't. It's a 21st century is what I look at.
So I know we often ask you, your crystal ball predictions of this, but if you're an investor out there listening to us right now thinking, okay, this is going to be tough going forward, what do you do? How do you steer the ship steady?
Great question. The U.S. economy, we're getting into the second longest run of expansion since World War II. Give it another 2 months, 3 months, it'll be the longest expansion. The difference is that the previous top five expansion runs, the long ones, they've had high GDP. We're not exactly high GDP, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, even at 3%, whatnot, it's lower than, you know, the last five runs of this length, or the top five, if you will. It's been a long run, but not a lot of GDP. So this economic recovery that we're seeing going on in the U.S., it's real. It's still in place. It's sustainable. Fundamentally, it's very, very strong. What hasn't happened is that the globe hasn't followed suit. Mm. For whatever reason, it has not come along. So are we running out of steam? I don't see running out of steam yet, but I do see
headwinds.
Are we at a peak? A little bit of headwinds. Yeah. But, you know, the peak is sort of like a Michael Jordan jump shot, you know, where he would do the jump shot and just his hang time, he'd sort of float in the air. How long can this peak stay a peak? Could it be 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? I don't know. The point is you don't have the world economies coming up with the United States behind it. It's tepid. So as an investor, I'm probably not as gung-ho bullish as I have been on other economic runs, although the building blocks are in place. I mean, I'm still quite bullish America once we get on the other side of the midterm elections. And you've got these, storms that are out there in Europe, but I think that's going to attract capital in the United States. I think it'll attract capital here. We still have low unemployment. We're still having job creation. Interest rates, you know, the 10-year goes from 3% to 3.25%. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when mortgages were 11%.
Yeah, me too.
So, you know, mortgage rates are low. Yeah. You know, interest rates are low. No inflation, very, you know, limited inflation. I'm not concerned much at all with where the economy is going in the United States. I still think it's the place to invest. I think treasury yields, the yield curve will continue to flatten. I think treasury yields will come down as people look for safe haven money. So your bond portfolio should be okay. And I think the market is ultra sensitive to this economy starting to peak and run out of steam. So we'll see where the Fed takes that. What we haven't seen in this expansion is business investment yet. You haven't seen businesses start writing the checks to reinvest in their businesses right. yet. You know that, and that's been one of the things that has been holding it back. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm still bullish. I'm still on board. I'm waving my flag nice and high, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
Don, always a great conversation. How can people get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation one-on-one?
Go to the Associated Bank website. The foreign exchange and capital markets number is right there. Pick up the phone. Give us a call. Any one of 14 people can pick up and just ask for me. I'm sitting on the desk.
Great. Well, we'll see you next time.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
Hey, it's Don Lloyd. He's in charge of the foreign exchange, derivatives markets, capital markets at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. You can hear them every Thursday right here on The Opening Bell. You can find more about our thought leaders at WGNradio.com and at AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. This is The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. Chicago cabbies are working with Uber and Lyft drivers to limit the number of new rideshare drivers in Chicago. Both cab drivers and rideshare workers rallied at City Hall on Wednesday to regulate the number of Uber and Lyft drivers that hit city streets to help those currently driving earn more money while also cutting down on traffic congestion. And Divvy is giving free rides on Election Day. On Tuesday, November 6th, riders can operate Chicago's bike share system for free, making it easier for Chicagoans to get out and vote. The free ride is valid for unlimited 3-hour trips in a 24-hour period using code VOTE18 in the Divvy app. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. In Chicago, a plan is being rolled out that could end homelessness, at least significantly reduce it over a period of years. It is a substantial increase in the real estate transfer tax that would be put on high-end properties, funding services for the city's most vulnerable residents. Doug Schenkelberg is here this morning, executive director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, to talk more about this. Doug, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is something that the city council will start talking about today, part of your organization's Bring Chicago Home campaign. Talk to us about where the idea came from and what the hope is for it.
Chicago Coalition for Homeless and our coalition partners, we've been working on addressing homelessness in Chicago for a long time. We have about 80,000 people in Chicago experiencing homelessness. This is people on the streets, people in shelters, and people who are doubled up or couch surfing. And that's men, women, children, families, people from all stripes. And we've known for a while that while there's been great efforts in the city by advocates and by providers to serve that population, it's not enough. And our city, the city of Chicago, is really low when we compare it to our peer cities on how much we contribute to addressing homelessness. We're down at the bottom when we compare it to other cities. And so we needed to do something big. And so we've looked at what our peer cities have done around the nation, looking at L.A. and other folks where they've dedicated local dollars and at scale to have a real impact on the problem. And we wanted to do something similar here in Chicago so we could really move the needle on the problem.
Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of this. We're talking about the transfer tax. This is only going to apply to properties of $1 million and up, those high-end properties. Talk to us about where the tax is now, where it's going to go, and how much it may generate.
So right now that tax is at about, we would raise it by 1.65 percentage points. So for a property at $1 million, you would see, and this is a tax that's only paid at the time of sale, so it only happens when properties change hands. It doesn't happen every year. So you'd see an increase of about $17,000 for folks at buying a property at $1 million. And it's only going to impact 5% of property sales, so of residential property sales. So 95% of residential properties would never see a change in the tax. It applies to both residential and commercial, and based on our calculations, you would see roughly $150 million in new revenue every year come in through this increase.
The numbers here in terms of what we're talking about over a 10-year period could be 36,000 people taken off of that 80,000 homeless in Chicago. That's a pretty significant number.
Yeah, I mean, it's an investment that can have a real significant impact. That's thousands and thousands of people right now who are dealing with mental health issues, with chronic health issues, with underemployment, who would have the housing services they need to have a stable life and have great opportunities. And they're Chicagoans like all of us, and they deserve the same chances as everybody else. And this type of investment would have a huge impact on their lives and on the greater community.
$150 million a year. Give us a sense of how that would impact the current operations for the homeless. What kind of things would that money be spent on? Would it be earmarked only for homeless problems, or would it be one of these funds that people could just dip into, the government could dip into? Those are questions I'm sure the public wants to know answers to.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And the one, it would be dedicated solely to addressing homelessness. It's built into the ballot language for the referendum, and it would be built into the ordinance that would change the tax if the voters approved changing it, and the city council passed that ordinance. The types of things that it would go for is primarily permanent housing with services. So what we know works for addressing homelessness, which isn't a big surprise, is real housing. We're not talking just about shelters, but we're talking about permanent, stable housing for folks. We know that when you give people permanent housing and give them the type of services they need to address the issues they're dealing with, they don't go back to homelessness. It's a proven solution to homelessness, and what it's lacking is significant resources to implement it at scale. So that's what the money would be focused on.
We all have all seen the homeless encampments around the city, the north side, in the city center as well, in the business district. I guess the idea here is to get people in homes and take those encampments away and give people a real chance at having a life other than being homeless.
Right. Exactly, yeah. So the, you know, the city at different points in time has dealt with addressing homelessness by just trying to hide it. Encampments are a very visible form of homelessness, though that's not the only form. You know, the families that are doubled up and families in shelters you don't see, but they're dealing with instability just as much. But the real way to address encampments and the folks living in encampments is to provide them real housing, and that's what this would do. Just trying to take down an encampment and essentially move people around the city doesn't solve homelessness and doesn't help us as a whole. So we're hoping that this solution is the real solution for getting folks off the streets and into the housing they need.
Doug, you mentioned earlier that part of this is going to include a referendum. And there's already some evidence that the voters are going to support this or have signified that they would support this. What are the next steps, including putting all of this before the city council?
Right. So as you mentioned, you know, we've done some polling that shows two-thirds of Chicago voters approve of this idea, and it would vote for it if it showed up on the ballot. You know, a resolution was introduced yesterday at the city council meeting. The next step would be to have a hearing on the issue, and hope to have that in the next couple of weeks, and then have city council vote on the resolution, which would put the question on the February ballot. And then a simple majority of voters need to say yes to that ballot question. And when they do, that gives city council the permission to change the tax and direct this money to addressing homelessness in our city.
What do you foresee as being the challenges in moving forward on this?
So, as with anything, you know, when you do this type of investment and raise this type of revenue, there's going to be folks that there's going to be a source of this revenue. With this, the real estate transfer tax, and we suspect that there's going to be folks that don't want to see that money come from their industry and go to addressing this. Our feeling is, you know, when we change this tax for properties over $1 million, we're focusing on a segment of the market that has the means. There's a real relationship between the rising cost of real estate and the rising numbers in homelessness. Our response to folks that think that this isn't the right revenue source or this isn't the right time is there never is the right money or the right time, but there is a moral imperative. We do something about homelessness. So let's do something that might make us a little uncomfortable, but will really move the needle and make us the best version of ourselves.
I'm guessing you've probably had discussions already with the real estate community and business community. Those would be two of the groups that I think you would have to get on board with this, right?
Yes, and we've had initial conversations with folks in both those communities, and we hope to have more conversations with them. We'd love to get them, have them on board with us and have all be on the same page about this being the right solution at the right time. If they're not, we're going to continue to move ahead because we think that this is a moral imperative for the city of Chicago and believe that this is the right way to address this problem.
Doug, we appreciate you being with us this morning. We're going to stay tuned with this and see how this progresses. We'd love to have you back and give us an update on how things are going.
Love to do that. Thanks so much for the time.
All right, Doug Schenkelberg is Executive Director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless. You can find out more about this online. There's a special website set up for this, bringchicagohome.org. That's bringchicagohome.org, and you can find more about the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless at chicagohomeless.org, chicagohomeless.org.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN, Associated Bank Market Desk futures pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all up more than 0.5% this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Oregon Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We ended the month of October with a mixed grain and livestock market yesterday. Only the December wheat contract closed higher for wheat. It was up 1.5 cents. The other wheat months traded lower. December corn down 1.5 cents. But November soybeans gained 5.5 cents a bushel in the trade yesterday. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the October cattle contracts terminated yesterday. October live cattle up $2.10 a hundredweight, but the December live cattle contract ended only 25 cents a hundredweight higher. And the November feeder cattle contract gained $1.22 per hundredweight for the day. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, November the 1st. There's a full line of economic reports today. The weekly jobless count leads off the day. Analysts forecasting 212,000 Americans filing first-time claims for unemployment benefits. Also today, a report on productivity and labor costs. That's for the third quarter. Economists predict a 2.3% gain in productivity and a 1.3% increase in labor costs. September's construction spending figures also due out today. Building industry analysts expect a 0.2% boost in spending. The Challenger Job Cut Report is out today. A report on the PMI Manufacturing Index, the ISM Manufacturing Index, the EIA Natural Gas Report. And a big day for earnings, including Chicago Kraft Heinz, Apple, AMC Networks, Progressive, CBS, Cigna, Starbucks, Shake Shack, GoPro, Wayfair, iHeartMedia, and Spotify. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, November the 1st.